Little social time before our meeting officially started. I would like to welcome you to the May meeting of the Health and Nutrition Committee with SCAC, and we are going to get started. Crystal, I would like to invite you to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going to share my screen so that we can get the flag up.
I would love that. Thank you. Everyone, please stand, place your hand over your heart, and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. What an honor.
Thank you so much. All right. And I would like to invite our Vice Chair, Patty Mouton, to give us a roll call.
Okay, I don't have a roster. So is there,
I'll pull it right now. I would be glad to complete it. Give me 1 second to pull the roster if you don't
mind. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
No worries.
Jenna saves us again.
Is that something that you can send to me before each meeting so that I have it right here to share screen?
Sure, no problem. Okay. All right, Linda Cardoza.
Present, sorry, I was on mute.
Hey, Linda.
Hi there.
Meredith.
Present.
Sherry Geyer. Margaret Hong?
Here.
Elizabeth Jimenez? Phil Mandeville?
Present.
Patty Mouton?
Present.
Ann Murdy?
Present.
Phil Orlin?
Present.
Barbara Sloat? David Sullivan?
Here.
Perfect. And we have one new member joining as well, Amina Sen Matthews.
Am I supposed to be on the roll?
I'm sorry. Crystal Miles. I'm sorry. You are. I missed you.
I'm here.
I marked you present. Thank you so much. We do have a quorum.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Well, Amina, we would love to have you introduce yourself to our group as a new member of SCAC and someone that is visiting our committee for the first time.
Thank you so much, Meredith. As Meredith mentioned, my name is Amina Sen Matthews. I am the program director here at the Cambodian Family Community Center. I'm a new member of SCAC, so I'm here just to learn and to decide which committee I will be spending some more of my time with. So I'm just here to observe and just to listen in. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us and welcome to SCAC. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Meredith, if I may interrupt as well. You know, I must have had an older list. Jerry Chang is also present. I want to just make it on the record, but he was not on this roll call. So I'm going to update the roll call. Just want to make
Thank
sure
you,
on
Jenna.
The record. You're welcome.
Thank you so much. And we're glad that you're here as well, Jerry. All right. Okay. Well, the next thing that we would like to do is have Frank Hernandez share an Office on Aging update with us. So welcome, Frank. We're so glad that you're here and we're looking forward to hearing about what's going on.
Hey, thank you for having me. So in the back behind the scenes, we're still in the process of getting our team up and running. I sent out an email for our older members to see if they're willing and wanting to be engaged in the virtual programming that we have for the upcoming training. Depending on the number of people that we have, will dictate how soon that training will take place, but hopefully within the next 2 weeks, if everything goes well, we'll have a...
And can you, for the new members, can you tell a little bit about what this curriculum is and...
Sure, so let me...
Background.
I got all excited, I'm on screen, so, you know, talking to myself for so long, you know, it's kind of a little...
we're all coming out of the fog, it's all good. Right.
So I'm talking about the evidence-based education programs that we have. So we're trying to relaunch the virtual program of the Healthier Living with Chronic Conditions program and engaging our current leaders that were originally doing the in-person classes. We're asking them to come back and do it virtually so they can do it via Zoom. And once that training is conducted, then we'll also engage our Matter of Balance team to see if they're able to launch the virtual program for Matter of Balance training. So these are 7 to 9 sessions, depending on which program the participants are going to participate in. With that said, our leaders for the chronic disease self-management, it's only a half day training. And same with the Matter of Balance program. And then if we find that we have a low turnout, then we're gonna have to start soliciting our team so that we can get more robust members to offer the class virtually. But that's in the future.
Frank, do you see these classes also being offered again in person with some of the senior centers reopening over the summer?
Well, right now, it's still a touch and go, considering that I've just talked to Marco via email. So I didn't talk to him, I wrote to him. And at the present time, we're locked down. And as far as we know, we have to be in the yellow for a certain period of time before we can even consider in-person classes. So that's being discussed as we speak offline.
Oh, that's really good to know.
Yeah. So if everybody manages to either get vaccinated or stay home, then we can have a lot less infection rates. And then we can see how we're going to be reopening things. Hopefully that was a brief as we wanted it.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you so much for coming and for sharing. And I wish you all the best in getting the volunteers trained, and hopefully a lot of older adults will get those meaningful classes. They have great impact on people's lives.
Off topic. I mean, having the opportunity to staff the call center, a lot of seniors that are homebound, that are, you know, it's the 1 year and some months has been it's been taking a toll on seniors. Mm-hmm. And so the sooner we get at least video chat conferencing and classes going, the better. Cause I can see any kind of engagement, even on the computer, would be perfect.
Yes.
And yeah, I know that my supervisor mentioned that we're trying to facilitate a loaner program for iPads, mm-hmm. so that if people do not have access via a computer, that they can borrow one of our iPads. But that's still in its works, and I don't know how soon that's going to happen. Knowing how county works, it might be around the time we get back in person. But the good thing is that we have a new option to deliver the class virtually. So if people are homebound, then they'll have another option to attend the class when they can't leave their home.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I did hear from the California Department of Aging that they are getting those loaner tablets and devices out across the state. So that's really exciting for people that don't have access right now.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Frank. We appreciate you coming. You're welcome to stay, or if you need to go, we understand that too. Thank you.
We'll see how things go.
Okay, thanks. Now we have our presentation for this month's meeting. It is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we are so grateful to have Nancy Cooper from the American Foundation for Suicide giving us a presentation today. You can see it in her background, Talk Saves Lives. And we're also specifying 4 seniors because of the nature of our work. Mm-hmm. And then she has Jessica Bautista with her, who is going to be helping with information and answering questions and giving information in the chat. So we want to thank you both for being here. We want to welcome you, and we are so looking forward to what you have to share.
Thank you very much, Meredith. And I'll speak while I'm attempting here to share my screen. My name is Nancy Cooper, and I am the current chair of the Orange County chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And I am so happy to be here to be able to give this presentation to you. And like we already mentioned, Jessica is with me today. She is an AFSP volunteer, and she's going to be monitoring the chat room. The topic of suicide can be very, very difficult. And if there is anybody in, I'll call it the room, the Zoom room is here today, that would like to pose a question during the presentation, and if you would like it to be private, please feel free to do so with Jessica. At the end of the presentation, I will be giving time for questions and answers. Like I said, suicide is a very difficult topic, but it's critical to have these conversations in order to prevent suicide. And I am so, so grateful to be able to be with you here today. Now, if for any reason you are leaving the room, the Zoom room, if you can let us know that you're okay in the chat, can you tell us, I'm fine, kids, I just have to leave? And this is so that we're monitoring, because we want to make sure that everybody in the room is feeling safe or feeling comfortable, and their mental health at the moment is being taken care of. But Talk Saves Lives is our introduction to suicide prevention. And we know that suicide is a complex health issue. But despite its complexities, suicide can be prevented. So just like there are other warning signs and risk factors for other health crises, like let's say a cardiac arrest, we can learn about the warning signs and the risk factors that can help us to prevent people from dying by suicide. So with like other health issues, time can be a critical and life-saving measure. So typically, a life can be saved if you allow time for the person's suicide risk to subside or to get them through those periods of distress, and to help them get mental health help. So to prevent suicide, we need to identify those persons who might be suicidal, as well as take an active role in connecting them with the help they need before they take that action to end their own lives. The purpose of Talk Saves Lives is to provide community members like yourself with a general overview of what suicide is, who it affects, what we know about it, and what can be done to help prevent it. This presentation will cover some of the statistics of suicide to give you an idea of the scope of the problem. We're also going to touch on some of the key research findings, including the risk and protective factors. And we're going to talk about what works and what we can all do to prevent this leading cause of death. Now, how we talk about suicide matters. So before we get started, I wanted to go over some of the terminology that we use when we talk about suicide. It's important to model appropriate language so that we don't perpetuate the stigma of suicide or mental health conditions. So let's establish our baseline. We do avoid using the phrase committed suicide, as this can be a very negative connotation, because oftentimes when we hear the word committed, it's also connected to a crime, like they committed a murder or a burglary. Instead, we encourage you to please use phrases like died by suicide, ended his or her life, killed himself, herself, or themselves. And when talking about suicide and suicide attempts, we really want to avoid using the words failed or successful attempt. Not only are these words unnecessary, but actually these words imply a judgment. And instead, we encourage you to use the phrases such as attempted suicide, suicide, or death by suicide. Educating the public about suicide is critical. So when suicide is talked about in a safely and accurately, we can help reduce the likelihood of its occurrence. We want to change how society understands mental health and suicide, because when we open up and connect, talk saves lives. Suicide is a significant issue that affects individuals, families, friends, and communities. So let's start with the statistics that demonstrate the scope of the problem. Because suicide is a global problem. And according to the World Health Organization, each year over 800,000 people die by suicide worldwide. And while this is the most accurate data that we have, we actually estimate that the number is higher because we know that there are countries that do not report suicide adequately. So that, when we look at that number, that comes to a suicide every 40 seconds worldwide. I think somebody has their speaker on, or if they can mute yes. themselves, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. So in the United States, suicide rates are recorded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And according to the CDC, over 47,000 people died by suicide in the year 2019. And this makes suicide the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. Suicide takes more lives in the United States than homicide, war, and natural disasters put together. Now, these high numbers is just one of the reasons that it's so important to talk about suicide, like any other illness. The more we talk, the less stigmatized the topic of suicide becomes. And for every death by suicide, it is estimated that 25 others have attempted. And when we look at that number, that comes out to about 1 million Americans a year who survive a suicide attempt. And when you think about any loss, it impacts many people in the community, and suicide is no different. It affects family, friends, co-workers, neighbors, schools, faith communities. It's estimated that a majority of Americans will experience a suicide loss during the course of their lifetime. So now we want to look at some research. It's only been the past several decades that scientists have been studying suicide. Research is shedding light on many critical areas, but you know, we know that we have a lot more to learn. Now, one of the main questions that the researchers ask is, why do people take their own lives? And through research, we have learned that there is no one single cause for suicide. Suicide most often occurs when several stressors, health issues, all come to converge to create an experience of utter hopelessness and despair. Research has consistently shown that a large majority of people who die by suicide have a mental health condition at the time of their death. It may or may not have been adequately diagnosed or being treated at the time. But that being said, research has also made it clear to us that the mental health conditions are not the whole story. You know, mental health conditions are quite common, and a vast majority of people who suffer these conditions don't go on to die by suicide. So in addition to the mental health conditions, there are other factors that can increase a person's risk as well. We've actually learned through research that the brains of people who die by suicide differ from those who die from other causes. And this is in the areas of structure and function, especially in the areas related to stress response and impulse control. We've also learned that most people who are suicidal are ambivalent about taking their life. There's a part of them that wants to live, and there's a part of them that wants to die. Research is helping to form key strategies in suicide prevention that involve engaging that person, that part of the person that wants to stay alive, and helping to create a distance from the part of them that wants to die. And the one way that we do that is to help the person connect with reasons for living, and while at the same time decreasing the visibility or the presence of the things around them so that they may facilitate them taking their own lives. And one of the many important things that we've learned through research is the perspective of the suicidal person. A crisis point has been reached. And for the suicidal person, the pain just seems unbearable, whether this is emotional pain, physical pain, and sometimes it's a combination of the both. So for a moment, I would like for you to think of it back in time when you may have been experiencing intense physical pain. At that moment, and it could be at childbirth, it could be passing a kidney stone, it could be a broken bone. But at that particular time, do you think that you would have been able to give a stranger clear and accurate directions to your house? Well, probably not. And the reason I say that is several years ago, I broke an arm and everybody went around me was asking me for the keys to my car. It was so simple to say the keys were in my purse, and I couldn't even dredge up that language. It hurt so bad. This is an example that pain makes ordinary thinking nearly impossible. So for the suicidal person, the thinking becomes constricted at that moment in time. It's like a state of intense tunnel vision where all other options just seem unavailable. Someone who considers suicide cannot foresee a time when they're going to be without the pain. So understanding the perspective of the suicidal person has also helped us to learn that the suicidal feelings are often temporary. They come on rather intensely, and sometimes they last for minutes, and sometimes they last for hours. But keeping people safe, helping them feel supported, can get them through those critical moments. And there is evidence that putting time and distance between an individual who is suicidal and the means to take their own life can be a life-saving action. So this is why it's so important that we take the steps when we know that someone is struggling and help keep them safe. Research has also helped us to determine the key factors of those persons who might be at greater risk. Risk factors are defined as those characteristics or the conditions that increase the chance that a person might take their own life. Risk factors are important to know so that we can understand the big picture of someone who is considering suicide. So someone who is at risk for, let's say, a heart disease because of, let's say, high blood pressure or a history of heart disease in the family, some people are at higher risk for suicide than others. And the main factors shown here are the health, historical, and the environmental. These risk factors can converge at different times in a person's life and will increase that person's risk for suicidal behavior at particular points of time. So for the first type of risk factors we have are the health factors, such as the biological or the psychological mental conditions. And the most significant are the mental health conditions. As we said before, most people who die by suicide have an active mental health problem at the time of their death. Depression is by far the most common mental health condition and the one most associated with suicide. But all of these conditions that you see here put a person at risk for the a greater risk for suicide. And detecting the presence of a mental health condition is critically important. So the best way to make sure, when you feel concerned or detect a possible change in yourself or in someone you know and your loved one's mental health, the best, the person at risk should seek a mental health evaluation and effective treatment. You know what? Many people don't even realize that their distress is actually causing a health problem. So providing information such as the crisis number or mental health services, resources to someone who is at risk or someone who is struggling can be a solid step in helping to connect with the help that they need. And mental health conditions are not the only health factors that are associated with suicide risk. Serious or chronic health conditions can increase a person's risk, especially if that person already has mental health issues. Chronic pain, serious head injuries like concussions, these have found to be put a person at greater risk for suicide. And the second type of risk factor we have are the historicals, historical facts, such as a family history of suicide, a family history of mental health conditions. It could be past traumas, such as a sexual abuse or combat stress. Research has also found that a history of childhood abuse can contribute to the suicide risk. And while most people who attempt suicide do not go on to die by suicide, previous suicide attempts are considered historical risks, and it puts that person at greater risk, at the greater risk for suicide. And the third type of risk factors we have are the environmental. Now, these are the involved the circumstances or surrounding a person's life. Often there are aspects of a person's environment that can contribute to their overall level at risk. Having an access to a way of killing oneself is referred to as access to lethal means. Now, this can include a variety of things like firearms, drugs, a car, or a bridge. And research has also shown that contagions. Now, this is the exposure to another person's suicide, or it's the sensationalized or graphic accounts of another person's suicide. Especially among those with other risk factors, this can increase the person's suicide risk. Prolonged stress. This can include anything like harassment, bullying, relationship problems, legal problems, or it could be unemployment. And then we have stressful life events. And these can vary across a lifespan of a person. And these can include experiences like a divorce, a legal problem, or a job loss. So to better understand the risk, here is an example of a set of risk factors that could converge on a person who is suicidal. So this example shows what is often the public perception of suicide. So when someone dies by suicide, often the story only tells or talks about the environmental factor. People see the life event, and it could be anything like a breakup or a job loss. And then they see that the person died by suicide. So they assume that the person killed themselves because of that one stressful life event. But that's never the full story. What we don't know is that person who died by suicide, they may have had a genetic risk for suicide. Maybe they had already been suffering from a depression or a severe anxiety. Maybe their work life had been becoming increasingly stressful. You know, sometimes the underlying depression makes the situation at work worse. Sometimes the stress at work makes the depression worse.
And sometimes they just start drinking more. The key here is that it's the combination of all these factors that could have contributed to the suicide death. Therefore, while a life event can play a precipitating role for that suicidal behavior, without the underlying factors, life events alone aren't thought to cause suicide. So if we're looking to the future, research is helping us find ways to fight suicide by looking at biomarkers. And this is, for an example, it's a testable blood sample that could help us to determine if somebody is a genetic risk for suicide. A number of clinical treatments, like particular types of therapies, are effective for suicidal people, and we know that more need to be developed and studied. And research can also help identify the most effective interventions and to help reduce the suicide rate. Now let's talk in the next few minutes about specifically about what research has shown us about the suicide risk among the populations of the people of 65 and older, our seniors. Now, although the suicide rates are highest among Americans ages 52 to 59, the rate among Americans 65 and older is still higher than the national average. The CDC reports that in 2018, the suicide rates for Americans of all ages was 14.21% per 100,000 people. And for individuals 65 or older, the rate rose to 17.36. When we look at men over 65, their rate is very high. It's at 32.51. A few minutes ago, we saw that in the general population for each suicide death, it is estimated that there are 25 attempts. However, when an older adult attempts to end their life, those attempts often result in death. And some of the reasons for this include such as the isolation, the greater access to the lethal means, and the increased likelihood of a serious health conditions that would make them less likely to survive a life-threatening event. And it's also essential to understand that depression is not a natural part of growing older. It is an illness, and that if left untreated, it can become fatal. You may be asking yourself, what can contribute to a senior's risk? Well, for individuals 65 or older, certain life circumstances can make them have a downpour of stressful events, increasing their risk. So for many seniors, to live alone has an increased feeling of isolation. They are also more likely to have experienced a loss of a life member, close friends, or a family member. And for many, especially those living alone, losing a pet can be a significant loss as well. And changes in their health that keep them from doing the things that they have always done, leading them to a loss of independence and making them feel, you know, more reliant on others. So major role changes such as retiring can also put older Americans at risk, especially men, who are more likely to define who they are as a person by their professional career. So when life changes and stresses occur, things can be done to be supported and can make a difference for our seniors. Helping them to stay connected is critical. Reach out to show that you're thinking about them. that you care. And this can be by phone, by online. And hopefully, now that we're all getting our shots and the COVID restrictions are easing up, we can start visiting them in person. Ask how they're doing and genuinely listen. Now, you don't have to have all the answers or fix their problems. You just need to be there for them. And if their health conditions are limiting their ability to do the things that they used to enjoy, together, you can discover new instances and hobbies together. Most people who experience these changes will not become suicidal, but those with the risk factors that we mentioned before, that we mentioned earlier. So it's so important to stay alert about their mental health and stay connected with them. So now that we have a better understanding of the scope of the problem of suicide and the key research findings, including the risk factors, so now let's focus on prevention. So just like that there are risk factors that increase a person's risk, we also have protective factors that can lower a person's risk. And if you are proactive about your mental health and make an effort to get healthy, you protect yourself. Feeling connected to family and community can protect against suicide. So when someone is struggling with a depression or an anxiety, a psychosis, or a substance abuse, these protective factors that are normally strong can erode at this time. So when that happens, having family and friends around us to remind us of our strengths can be a tremendous protective factor. Problem-solving skills can help. You know, life can get pretty tough, but being able to see our way through our problems can be a protective factor. And cultural and religious beliefs, those that encourage people to seek help, or those that discourage suicidal behavior, or those organizations that help create a purpose in life, these can all be a protective factor. Mental health care is important for preventing suicide. And we want to focus this on the next couple of minutes, because getting effective treatment for mental health conditions like depression and anxiety can prevent suicide. And critical to suicide prevention is getting people connected to the mental health treatment. So one of the biggest challenges that we have in fighting suicide is getting people to address their mental health conditions in the same way that they would for their physical health conditions. In fact, those suffering from a mental health condition, less than half will seek treatment. So one way to encourage individuals to seek help for their mental health condition is to treat mental health like any other aspect of their overall health. There are certain times when we get sick and we seek out a medical professional. We need a culture where everyone knows it's smart to take care of their mental health. So taking care of our mental health is just as important as taking care of our physical health. Actually, seeing a mental health professional is a sign of strength. And I'm happy to say that more people are actually taking that step. The person that is seeking help should request a thorough evaluation to figure out if, in fact, a mental health condition is affecting their life. There are many types of treatments available, like various types of psychotherapies and medication. And research has shown us that oftentimes it's the combination of both that is most helpful. But the most important thing to understand is that to find the treatment for the individual that works the best. The good news is that advocacy efforts have helped us to improve access to the mental health services so that more people can get the treatment that they need. The law now requires insurance plans to cover mental health services on par with physical health services. If we need mental health services, and one out of four of us will at one point, we should get treated and get our health back on track. So just like that we find strategies that optimize our physical health, we have the same strategies for our mental health. So in addition to the professional mental health care, we also have proactive strategies like exercise, a good, healthy, nutritious diet, good sleep habits, stress management. All of these play a critical role in promoting mental health and promoting resilience. Prevention efforts also include support for those that have been touched by suicide. A loss of one person to suicide profoundly affects others. And it's important that the survivors have the support that they need, both to heal and to reduce their own risk as well. And since those with lived experience, those that have attempted a suicide, or those who have experienced suicidal thoughts in the past, they are at increased risk, and we need to make sure that they have the support that they need. So for people who are at a crisis point, the most important thing that you can do is to put between a person, a suicidal person, and the way of ending their life is time. Research has shown us that by temporarily reducing a suicidal person's access to the lethal means, we give that individual time. Time for that intense suicide risk to diminish, and time for someone to intervene with mental health resources and support. For a majority of people who experience a suicidal crisis, if unable to access their chosen method, even temporarily, they are unlikely to engage in another action to take their lives. And in most cases, when a suicidal person doesn't have the current access to the means that they had been thinking about, they don't substitute it for another method. So therefore, a clear way to prevent suicide is to limit the access to lethal means. During a high period of risk, the safer their environment is, the better chance that a suicidal person has of living through that crisis period. And suicide prevention research has helped us look at a number of ways to create safer environments. Installing inexpensive carbon monoxide sensors on cars that would automatically shut off a car when unsafe levels of carbon monoxide are reached. This could save lives. And we've learned through research that installing barriers on bridges, this does deter suicide. And in many cases, the bridge barriers actually lowered the suicide rates in several in different regions. Restricting the access to lethal medications can reduce suicide. And this could be as simple as requiring the lethal drugs to be sold in blister packaging. Firearm safety is critical to reducing the suicide rates in the United States. Firearms are used in it's over half of all suicides, making suicide prevention an important part of gun safety education. So as noted already, and contrary to what you might have already believed, when access to their lethal means are limited, most people who are suicidal do not find the other means. So therefore, the suicide death doesn't occur at that moment, allowing more time for that person in crisis to get connected to help. So now that we've reviewed the key suicide prevention, let's talk about what we can all do. It is important to have a caring and supportive conversation with someone that you might be worried about. Allow them to share with you what they're experiencing. Now, this conversation not only shows that you care, but it also allows you time to gain more information about their level of distress. So let's start with the warning signs. Watch for the warning signs in yourself and watch for the warning signs in others. Now, while many of the suicide risk factors that we talked about previously, they endure over a longer period of time, but the warning signs are the observable signs that can signal that a suicide risk might be in the near future. So it's important to pay attention to both the risk factors that we talked about earlier and the warning signs that we're going to talk about now. I kind of referred this to as connecting the dots. If you see the warning signs, reach out to an individual in your life that you're concerned about, and reach out to others if you are struggling. Seek mental health services if you are depressed or if your anxiety is regularly interferes with your daily life, and encourage others to do the same. The suicide warning signs are typically displayed in these three main manners of talk, behavior, and mood. Many people who are suicide, actually, they talk about ending their lives. This, they might say it directly, they might say it indirectly, they might say it outright, they might start joking about it, but take it seriously. Often people talk about they feel that they have no reason to live. Others say that they just feel trapped. They just feel overwhelmed. They feel like they're a burden to others. And sometimes they just talk about being in unbearable pain. Behaviors that are atypical for an individual should also warn you, encourage you to speak to that person about the things that you're noticing. People display these behaviors. They can start increasing their use of drugs or alcohol. They have trouble sleeping, and sometimes that's insomnia, or sometimes it's sleeping too much. They start acting recklessly, particularly that person who is normally a very careful person. They withdraw from their activities, particularly the activities that they enjoy the most. And they isolate themselves from family, friends, communities, coworkers. They also might start looking for a way to kill themselves. They can search online for methods, or they can start shopping for a firearm. And then they also start giving away their possessions, like, and this could be showed reckless spending. And it was brought to my attention only recently that sometimes they start giving away their beloved pet. People who are at risk for suicide can display all these moods: depression, apathy, rage. All of these moods that you see here is moods that one would expect of someone who feels overwhelmed and they feel desperate. Now, we all have our ups and downs in life, and ups and downs in our moods. But when you notice a change that just seems uncharacteristic and is concerning to you, then it's important to speak to that person about what you're noticing. So for example, a sudden unexplained happiness. Now this is from a person who's been depressed lately. And then all of a sudden they're all happy. This can actually indicate that they have decided on a plan, on a method, and they're relieved to know that they're not going to be in pain any longer. Now, I know that's a lot of things to remember. So to sum it up, look for the changes in behavior and trust your instinct. I would like for you to assume that you're the only one that's going to reach out. There are so many instances when we talk about amongst ourselves about someone that we're worried about, and then we hesitate to reach out to that person. So here's the rule of thumb. If you are wondering if someone is depressed or overly anxious, That is a sure sign that you should reach out. And the same goes for you. If you are having suicidal thoughts, and that's a sure sign that you need to seek help also. If you've reached out before, reach out again. Maybe the first time the person may not have been receptive. Keep trying. Try talking to someone else or with a professional. And if the person that you're talking to, the person that you approach, if suicide turns out not to be a concern, they still might be in some level of distress. And you can make them feel comforted and supported just by knowing that you care and you took the time to listen. So, how do we reach out to someone? You want to talk to them in private, and you want to listen to their story and calmly express your concern and your caring. Ask directly about their suicide thoughts, and don't be afraid to ask the question, are you thinking about taking your own life? Encourage them to seek mental health services, and if in crisis, take them for help. There are some things to avoid when talking with someone who may be suffering from a depression or anxiety. Avoid minimizing their feelings. So for those of us that have never experienced a major depression, we literally can't imagine what it's like. And avoid trying to convince them that life was worth living. If a person is nearing a crisis point, they are not thinking clearly. Philosophical debates why life is worth living tend not to be very helpful at this time. And avoid trying to fix it. If a person is having a heart attack right now, in the room in front of you, you wouldn't tell them at this time to start exercising or eat a healthier diet. If they are in crisis, what they need to be is heard and then led to help. Listen to their story. Offer to help them find the mental health services. Help them to take active steps for keeping their environment safe. And if you think that they might make an attempt soon, stay with them. Don't leave them alone. Help them to remove the lethal means or remove them from a potentially dangerous area. Escort them to the mental health services, or you can take them to an emergency room. And you can help them call the lifeline, or you can call the lifeline yourself. And a trained counselor will tell you what you can do to help that person that's in distress. If you don't feel comfortable speaking to a counselor on the phone, you could always use the crisis text line. You text the word TALK to 741-741. So if you're unfamiliar with this, with these numbers, take a screenshot, take a picture of it on your phone, or pick up your phone and put these numbers into your contact list. You never know when you could use these resources, not only for yourself, but it could be a stranger. It could be a friend. And you could, and both of them are open 24/7, 65 days a year. I have had occasion to speak on 3 separate occasions to strangers that it was coincidentally, 2 of them happened to be both women. 2 separate parking lots, 2 separate times, were sitting in a parking lot. They were sitting in front of their car on that one of those concrete parking lot things, and they were crying. So I went up to them to say, is there anything I can help you with? Both of them told me that there were members of their family that were considering suicide and they didn't know what to do. So I connected them right away to the suicide prevention lifeline so that they can get the help that they need. And you could do the same. Even if you've never called the lifeline before, you can actually call the lifeline now. And you can say, hey, I just want to find out how this works. I am concerned about suicide prevention and how I can help other people. And if it's an emergency, if a suicide attempt is in progress, please call 911. Together, we can create a culture that's smart about mental health. We can save lives, and we can vastly improve the lives of others. You know, it's a really simple, but it's a really powerful idea that talk saves lives. By caring and reaching out, we can all play our part in suicide prevention. So before we go on to questions and answers, I wanted to share with you my story. I am a suicide loss survivor. I lost my son Jeff to suicide over 20 years ago. And it was 10 years after his death that I was introduced to AFSP, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And I learned about these warning signs and risk factors. And I'm here to tell you that it's true. He had these warning signs, he had these risk factors, and I didn't know. So here I am helping to promote suicide by prevention just by educating the public and members, community members of yourself, to be aware of the warning signs and risk factors so that we can all help to prevent suicide. So, I want to know, Jessica, do we have any questions in the chat? Or do we have any questions in the chat?
Not at the moment.
Okay, well, everybody feel free to unmute yourself. And if you would like to ask a question, please do so.
Can you please show your PowerPoint on that protective factors that start with companionship and compassion? I want to write it down, please.
Oh, is that the, let me see. Let's see if I can go back.
It's the prevention, you know, protective factors.
Okay, so warning signs, limiting access. Okay, so we have that, but.
Oh, the one before that. Yeah, yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Those are the risk factors, okay.
No, the one before that.
Before.
No, this, the one before this, the protective factors.
Protective factors,
okay. No, start with companionship. What?
Protective factors.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you leave that on for a minute?
Well.
I want to write it down for my students.
So I didn't get a chance to ask, or I didn't think of asking at the beginning of this program. You're all part of this particular group and you're all medical health professionals?
No.
No, we are a variety of volunteers that is part of the Senior Citizens Advisory Council. Some of us are in the aging profession and others are older adults and have a variety of backgrounds and experiences. We're all from Orange County and our role is to give feedback to the board of directors of board of supervisors in Orange County on older adult issues. And this is definitely top of mind, Nancy. You know, thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts.
Yeah.
This information is so powerful.
It is.
Your story is very powerful. You're taking, you know, your own sorrow and bundling it up and using it to help other people. So we really, really appreciate that.
Thank you. Yes. At some point in time, I decided that Jeff's death had to be a positive.
Yes.
So, and is Frank still in the room? Or did he leave?
No, I'm still here.
Frank, yeah, at the very beginning, you mentioned something that I thought was, and you can help me with this, that I thought was very relevant. You were talking about the technology of Zoom, I think, and you were also talking about distributing possibly loaning tablets. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to ask was, I have my own question here. The impression that I have been given, or the impression that I have, is that for a lot of seniors, the technology can be daunting, okay, and they're uncomfortable with it. So one of the things that I've tried to do is reach out to more caregivers and families of the seniors, so that they are aware. And am I off base in thinking that way?
Not at all. we normally try to reach out our on our some of our volunteers are caregivers. So one third are true volunteers that just want to give back to the community. And two thirds of our volunteers are professionals in the same fashion as you see in this Zoom meeting. There, some of them are caregivers, but I think this is going to be a spark back to getting back into reaching out to our caregivers and say, hey, we're relaunching this and maybe we can use your support as you're moving forward, as we're moving forward with our program. Maybe you can, what I normally do as we get the program moving is we set up a time to chat phone wise and then say, let's transition from the phone to a computer. And so before we even start the class, I have a one-on-one conversation, or my volunteers will have a one-on-one conversation on transitioning from the phone to a computer or some sort of technology. But having caregivers as something that we can use in our tool belt would definitely help us a lot just ahead of time. And since they're in the same room at potentially at the same time, maybe they can help facilitate the class or with that learning curve. But that's a great idea. Thank you for highlighting that.
Yeah, because if you feel that there's a community, communities that could reach out to, like I say, the families and the caregivers, are they knowledgeable about the stressors, the and what this all can lead to for the seniors? You know, it's the caregiver, it's the families. That I feel that need to know this, okay? So that's a thought, and I'm always, we are always here if you want to give this to anybody else in your community that you're associated with.
Oh, most definitely. We're always reaching out and trying to find ways, new and improved ways to incorporate the classes with our community. And it's just, we have to address it in multifaceted way,
right?
Emails, other partners such as yourself, and caregivers and families.
Right.
So anytime. And we also provide a table of resources where they can, review prior to the class or after the class. So it's always, so moving forward, if it's virtual, I'm going to have to incorporate a slide with other resources that they can reach out to. Plus we're Office on Aging. So we're always trying to promote our call center at the same time to try other resources.
Super. Okay, good. All righty. Good. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Anytime.
Does anybody else have questions?
I do, Nancy. So a couple of years ago, we had one of our community member, we lost her to suicide. And there were a lot of warning signs. So she came to us for help and we tried to help her. She ended up going to the hospital and she was committed to the hospital for a couple of days. They kept her there and she was released from the hospital. And one of our case manager, you know, continued to be with her. And we thought she was getting better. And I got sick and when I was at home, I got word that she had ended her life. She and that really took me by surprise because I just didn't think that it was going to go that way. I mean, she was in so much pain. I mean, I resonated when you were talking about how when somebody was just in so much pain and when she came to us, she was in so much pain. And I sat there and talked to her and and supported her. And every one of our staff, she went to and reached out, and we all listened. We all tried to be there for her. We've taken her to the hospital. We helped her to get translated. We helped her with her psychiatrist. We helped her with her therapist. But after all of that, you know, it was hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet.
What could we have done?
Well, actually, what I'm hearing you say, I think you did everything possible. And I am so sorry for your loss. And it is devastating, isn't it? It just hits you so hard. And it sounds to me like, you know, she was determined that this is what she was going to do after all that help. And I don't want you, I hope that you and the other caregivers don't feel guilty about that. Just know that you did everything you could.
Yes.
And sometimes it's just, it just goes out of our hands.
Yeah. And that's why I'm the program director here at the Cambodian Family Community Center. And mm-hmm. that's what we continuously do. I mean, especially now during Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yes.
We're talking about that more because it hit home for all the case managers here, because we all played a hand in her care.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
But yeah, I just want to kind of assure them too that we did all that we could do.
Yes. Yeah.
She wanted to do that, you know, because mm-hmm. at the end, I mean, she went.
Mm-hmm. So I encourage you all to take care of your own mental health, right? Because you're a lost survivor, okay? Yeah. And a lost survivors need support too. And so, you know, for your own mental health, so you can go, you know, so you can continue with the work that you're doing, that you like to do, that you love to do. So make sure that you all take care of yourselves also. And just by knowing that you did everything you could. And there's sometimes that's all we can do.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Nancy? Well, Nancy, I really appreciate everything that you've shared with us. It's so powerful. It helps us to frame things in a way that's based on the facts and research and how we can be helpful,
which
is super important. And I also appreciate the call out for us to put the Lifeline number in our phones. I think that's something very practical that we can all do today. And also the text talk number. Mm-hmm. So that when we do see someone in distress, if they're in our path for a reason that day, we do have the resources to give them the assistance that they need. So
yes,
thank you so much.
Especially volunteers, because not all of us, I'm not a trained professional. And for myself, if somebody were to say something and I don't know what to say back, that resource can help you. Because they say things and, you know, and that's part, I think, I have to honestly tell you, the sentence, that the ask, are you thinking of killing yourself? It sticks in my throat when I have to ask somebody that. And I think part of it is because, OMG, what am I going to say if they say yes? You know? So, but that being able connected to have that the Lifeline with you as a resource, that is vitally important for everybody to know. And it really does help.
And I can attest just from working with other people, when you do ask the question, are you thinking of it? Then they respond well, they want that help.
You're right, exactly. So just in closing, Jessica, thank you for helping me today. Thank you everybody for having us. And Jessica, I'm not looking. Have you put the survey form in the chat?
Go potty.
Okay. I am
someone's trying to speak.
It's fine. Just go pee.
I love it. Somebody's got a child in the room.
Oh,
got it. So I am going to be following up with an email that you can forward to the group. It will be a list of resources and stuff, and it will be a follow-up to this presentation. And please feel to share it with anybody, okay?
We would love to share this information. It is life-saving. We thank you so much, Nancy. And thank you also, Jessica, for all the helpful information in the chat and for taking good care of us today.
Yeah, thank you very much. And oh, don't forget to fill out the survey form. I will have it in the email. This is a living, breathing organism, I call it. And oftentimes it gets changed depending on the feedback that they get from everybody. So thank you very much, everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Nancy, for being a hope carrier, Nancy.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Nancy.
All right, well, it feels like we should almost take a minute after that. It was so helpful and also heavy at the same time. I'm glad that we have the information that we need to share with people, but it is sobering to think about these things. So thank you all for being here and staying engaged. It's hard, but worth it. Mm-hmm. Transitioning now to chair items. The only thing that we have to speak about is our presentation schedule. We are dark in June, so don't be looking for a Zoom link or anything to happen in June. We have a break as a committee. Yeah, Frank, you're off the hook for June. In July, we are back together to hear more about what's going on at the Office on Aging. And then we have a presentation July 21st on the cancer code. Patty arranged this presenter for us, Dr. Trin. So we are going to be publicizing that information. Also very important life-saving information, I'm sure, for us to learn and invite people to. Moving on to announcements and roundtable discussion. I wanted to see if any of the members of our committee have an announcement or a roundtable discussion that they would like to bring forward. And then I have something that I would like us to think about, but first to committee members, is there anyone that would like to share?
Meredith, are we going to talk about a name change or any?
Yes, that's my item.
All right. I think I noticed that Patty's hand went up first.
Go ahead, Patty.
I just want to remind everybody that June 15th is the no, I can't remember what it is. Oh, golly.
You're having a Zoom.
It's the Elder Abuse Awareness Day presentation. And if you haven't marked your calendar, if you haven't registered yet, do so, because there are only 500 slots on this Zoom. And so they will fill up. But the two keynote speakers are really excellent. And I think it would be a shame to miss their perspectives. Yes. And I'm just going to be talking about local resources that many of you are already familiar with, but I wouldn't want to miss those two keynote speakers on the 15th of June.
Thank you. I'm registered and looking forward to it, and it is such an important topic.
I'd like to make an announcement that last week an email came from the Alzheimer's Family Center in Huntington Beach. They are going to have mini booster series on improving memory loss. And it starts on June 17th. I don't know if you'd like to me forward to you.
Yes, so, please, Margaret, and then I can give it to the whole group.
Yes, I'll do that.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I registered and then I looked on my calendar and I'm going to be flying in back from a little vacation, so I don't want to take somebody's spot.
Oh, okay. And I will let the gal who is handling the tickets know that you can't be there.
So I don't want to take somebody's spot. Thank you, Patty.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. I'm looking to see if we have any other hands up for committee member announcements. Sherry Geyer? You're on mute. There you are. You have a low bandwidth, it says, but we can hear some of what you're saying.
Sherry, if I can recommend turning off your camera, and usually that will help with the bandwidth. So if you turn off your video, we should be able to hear you better.
Did I turn it off?
No, it's still on. There you go.
Let's try to move forward. Just try to talk.
And Jenna, while we're working this out, Nicolette is
Hi, Frank.
A member and should be moved to the panelist.
Oh, sure.
Thank you so much.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Patty, are you able to put the link to register for the June 15th event into the chat?
I'm just getting that right now.
Awesome.
I had to come out of my full screen to do it. So I'll have
Thank
that
you so much. We have members asking. That's awesome. Okay, Sherry, do you want to try to talk? We're still having difficulty hearing you. I'm wondering, Sherry, if it would be more effective for you to type out your thoughts to us in the chat.
This is a brand new iPad, too. Okay, I will do that.
Thank you. So while we're waiting to hear Sherry's thoughts on the chat, the thing that several of us mentioned that we would love to discuss is renaming health and nutrition. So our SCAC chair, Elaine Genoway, sent us an email recently that SCAC has decided that we have the opportunity, should we choose, to rename our committee to line up with two out of the five big, bold goals of the Master Plan for Aging. So our goals that we've been assigned as a committee are goal number two, which is health reimagined. And the talking points for that is that we will have access to the services we need to live at home in our communities and to optimize our health and quality of life with the goal of closing the equity gap and increasing life expectancy. So that's health reimagined. And then goal number four has also been assigned to our group. And that goal is caregiving that works. So we had some discussion about caregiving earlier today. And the verbiage for that is we will be prepared for and supported through the rewards and challenges of caring for aging loved ones. And the target goal is 1 million high quality caregiving jobs. So I would love to have a group discussion for members to see, do we want to change our committee name from health and nutrition to encapsulate health reimagined and caregiving that works? So that's the first question. And then the second question is, if so, how do we bring those things together so that it's a mouthful that's easy to say and helps us with branding and identifying what we're all about? So I'd love to hear from you.
I'll comment. This is Crystal.
Hi, Crystal.
Hi. What about, I kind of like the idea of changing the name because nutrition is, but what about if we just said, health and caregiving that works for seniors.
Okay, health. I'm writing this down. So Crystal's idea is yes to the renaming and health and caregiving that works for seniors.
Right.
Thank you.
Could you send out an email so we can, about the options, so we can mm-hmm. review it and take a little time and make a really good decision rather than do it on the spot?
Yeah, definitely. Let's have our discussion today. And then Phil, I agree. We don't need to make an ultimate decision today. I think that wordsmithing, in my opinion, is going to be really important. We want something that's succinct and that's easy to say and easy to remember too.
My biggest concern about changing the name is now we are narrowing the scope of what we do. Maybe that's the purpose, I don't know. But if that's the purpose, then we should flow with it. And if not, why, you know, leave the name alone.
You know, Phil, this is Gene. I think it's just the opposite. It is expanding the role. Health and nutrition is too narrowly defined of what's now one of the master plan on aging is the goal that you've got. It's much more, and you can look it up online and see all the areas it encompasses. So when you say health and nutrition, you're automatically limiting the scope for people to think, oh, well, that's just health and nutrition. And it's much, much more than that, which is why Chair Genoway is looking at, here's an opportunity to rename your group. You don't have to. You can keep the name till the end of the year. But after that, it's going to have to align more up with what those goals are that they encompass. We had a lengthy discussion with the legislative committee, because they had a real hard time with it because they were so focused on legislation, and it's now much, much more than that. It's much broader than that. So just keep that in mind. And it's also an opportunity to say, well, this has expanded a lot more things. I'm not sure I really want to do that. I'm going to look at it for another subcommittee and see if that aligns with what I really want to look at. So this would be the time now, up until July, actually, to make that swap. The chair would like to have this name, Meredith, by the first part of June, though, if you so choose to rename it. And what Crystal mentions, it is a little more expansive, and that's a good thing. So, yeah, everyone's going through this growing pain, trust me, because you're so used to what you've had, and now you've got to kind of expand that thinking, and it's been kind of a little, you know, nobody likes change but a baby with dirty diapers, and that's kind of what we're looking at here. So,
thank you for the framing and the context, Gene, and the humor as well.
Hey, Gene, Dave Sullivan, tell me, does anybody in the Office on Aging or in the Executive Committee care about nutrition for seniors?
They definitely do care about nutrition for seniors, yes, sir.
And where
I think I see nutrition as a category that could fall under health myself.
Yeah, I would say, Dave, don't be limited by, I don't see the word. Oh, hang on just a minute here. Call you later. It's much more than that. Literally, you can fit anything you're doing into your broader definition. So if you want to focus a lot on nutrition, go for it. This is not meant to limit, but to expand. So just kind of keep that thinking in mind. Legislation, they said the same thing. Well, aren't we concerned about laws? Well, yeah, we are. But remember, and Dave, I'll take you back to what is the mission of this subcommittee? The mission of this subcommittee is to be the keep your finger on the pulse of the senior community, find out what the issues are for them, and then we're going to report that back to our supervisors. This whole group exists to give the supervisors good data to say, this is what the seniors are looking at, this is what the seniors need, and that's where we advocate. It's not to educate us so we come out and become better health and nutritionists and spread the word. That's not our function.
Well, one of the wonderful things, from my opinion, too, is that nutrition is funded through the Older Americans Act, and we've had robust nutrition through the pandemic. So I feel like that's a need that is not perfectly met, but it is being met. And Health Reimagined and Caregiving That Works are more umbrella terms that can fit different things underneath.
And that is exactly, Meredith, what the intent of this group is to do. Find out there for the seniors, what are those issues? Is it what Dave just said? Is it, hey, we're really concerned about nutrition? Or is it about, you know, housing needs? It is about health needs, mental health. How do we make the transition back from COVID? What are the needs that are out there? That's what we're supposed to be translating and validating for the supervisors.
Okay, we have a couple of hands up. So
that's fine, but how are you going to, I'm really interested in this lawn name, what it's gonna describe. Seems almost ethereal.
Well, if I was a new member and I'm walking up, what am I joining? What's going to entice me to say, I want to look at this group? What name is going to hook me, Dave? If you say health, okay, I get it. That's just health, or are you doing other things? Oh, no, yeah, we're doing nutrition. We're doing mental health. We're doing all these other caregiving. Oh, okay, so it's much broader. So that's what I would add. That's what I would challenge you with. Come up with something that's going to be so broad that it doesn't limit your thinking.
That's helpful. So we have Susan, then Nicolette, then Linda.
So I just wanted to say that the word reimagined is a fabulous word.
Yes.
And so if whatever title or however we summarize health, nutrition, mental health, et cetera, I think using that word reimagined sort of is engaging and is that we are moving forward, that things are changing, that we are with the change and we are doing things to accommodate the change. So I just wanted to say that.
I think I agree with you, Susan. And I think that's precisely why the California Department of Aging and their stakeholder group statewide labeled it reimagined. It's a powerful word and it helps us not get stuck and think about the possibilities. Mm-hmm. Okay, Nicolette.
Susan, I agree with you totally. And my thought was, couldn't we say senior care support reimagines?
Right.
Because that's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about, as Gene mentioned, this much broader perspective. We are reimagining how we can support the care, the health, and the well-being of our seniors.
Absolutely.
An excellent title.
Linda.
And so Meredith, I just wanted to make sure I understand what we're looking at, because when I look at the two goals, I actually have the MPA right in front of us, and we look at health reinvention, and I agree with what Susan was saying. That's such a powerful word, and I'm looking at goal four, and if you look at each of the goals, there's obviously going to be strategies amongst or within each of the goals. Are we also willing to take a look at our membership to make sure we've got the right makeup of individuals? Because when you just look at goal two, and you look at the four strategies, we're getting into areas that I don't believe that we're represented on this committee. So we also have to be looking at that, whatever our name is. And if we're really going to be looking at these, because these are huge. And now that we've got two goals, it was one thing to look at just the one goal, but yeah. Now we're looking at two. That is a lot of area. And we really need to look at the makeup of our membership also.
That's a wonderful idea. Thank you so much for that input. I think that that's important as we're reimagining. Mm-hmm. Patty.
I put the Master Plan for Aging website in the chat so that if anybody hasn't had a chance to look at it, you can just click and start to see it. What about well-being reimagined?
Mm. Oh.
Because health is part of well-being, nutrition is part of well-being, care is part of well-being. It gives us enough foundational broadness.
I love that.
Patty, mm-hmm. Say that again, please.
Well-being reimagined. And in many circles in healthcare, nationally, well-being is becoming its own buzzword.
Yeah.
And it represents this holistic look at how we're providing care, services, supports to people.
So, and I think that it's good that it doesn't have the word senior in it. Maybe I'm just brainstorming because we're talking about caregivers. And so we're talking about both older adults and their caregivers.
Exactly. And the Master Plan for Aging is broader than just the
California for all ages.
Aged. It's about those of us that are heading into it. It's about those of us that are providing supports, housing, transportation, healthcare.
And people with disabilities of all ages too.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. In fact, I don't know how many got a chance to attend the SCAC general meeting last week, but it was on the Blue Zones project, which is on longevity. And it was fabulous, yes. At least it was for me. And it didn't specifically talk about senior, but it certainly led to how do you want to get to be a healthy senior and then enjoy your time when you're there. And they had these 9 points that they talked about. It was just really good. In fact, I shared it last night at our council meeting. Council meeting, and that council loved it. They go, wow, that's some good stuff. And it takes off after the five cities or five areas, regions or zones, they call it, mm-hmm. throughout the world where the population lives well over 100. And they researched, why are these people living longer than everybody else? And that's how they came up with these nine points. And boy, I'll tell you, it's good stuff, really good stuff.
I would really love to suggest that we have her come and speak to our committee because she's a very engaging speaker. It's right close to home that they've done this up in the South Bay area. And we may or may not be able to get a special group that could engage exactly in a Blue Zone transformation. But there's a lot that our senior centers could do to be more Blue Zone-ish.
Yes.
Patty, Lauren's a friend of mine, and whatever you and the committee would like to do, I could make that happen.
Fabulous.
Did you Wonderful. Know that one of those Blue Zones worldwide, one is just here in San Bernardino? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Loma Linda. Loma Linda. I was blown away. Loma Linda?
They're Seventh-day Adventist.
And yeah, that's what I was
graduated from Loma Linda University.
Uh-huh.
And they're Seventh-day Adventist. And let me tell you, they eat very healthy, right? They're vegetarians. They don't drink alcohol. Right. And they're very big into health and fitness. So,
and they have a faith community that they're very involved with that's connecting them.
That too, Meredith. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
But it was also about staying engaged, staying involved with your pod or your family. Love your loved ones, take time for them. There's a whole lot of things involved, which would also address the suicide program we just heard.
Yes.
That if people are connected and they have family, they have something they can reach out to. That's the mental health aspect that stays right. Strong. I didn't know they were Seventh-day Adventists. That's interesting. Thank you for pointing that out, Nicole.
Yes. All right. And then we have another endorsement for well-being reimagined in the chat. So that's helpful. So how does our membership feel if I get this together? We can think about it a little bit more. We do not have to decide today, but it sounds like we do need to come to a consensus by the first part of June so we can give the information back to Chair Genoway.
Well, let's take a quick vote. I kind of like that well-being imagined. That covers everything. It doesn't leave out anything. And as far as us being capable of handling that, I see no reason why we can't. Some of us are smarter than others, and some of us don't have quite everything together, but isn't that the whole idea?
Well, you know what? Don't get blown out. You know, how to eat an elephant one bite at a time. Don't get blown out with this whole, wow, that's so much. Do what we can do. If we can only do this much, that's how much we do.
Yeah.
It does open up more possibilities. That doesn't mean that we're going to do everything.
That's exactly right.
It's the possibilities. So we have a question from Susan in the chat. Is wellness the same as well-being? I don't think so, but what do other people think?
I like well-being. In fact, wellness has become the buzzword, so everybody's offering wellness. Just look at Rite Aid and CVS.
Yeah.
It's in their name. Wellness is part of the new landscape.
For me, well-being means your whole self, your spiritual, your mental, your physical, yes, your right, connections, your right. Community.
I get it.
That's what they talk about, all of those things too, Meredith. All of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's your pod. That's your stay connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if we could, within the next week, just put it, on email, so we could share our thoughts and our vote. You could have it by, say, next Wednesday.
So are we gonna also have to create a logo?
We were told that we're not doing that.
No, the only logo you have, thanks Frank, yeah. For bringing that up. The only logo you have is the Office on Aging logo. So
right.
Let's stay focused.
Right.
Phil, not to rush the process, but is there anything to add that you would like to add to it? Or would you also like the word well-being?
Yeah, no, everything sounds good. And as far as I'm concerned, the consensus is that well-being takes care of the big picture and allows us to move forward. However, having said that, nothing is locked in stone. So as we evolve, if we see a need for a change, we could probably look at it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will this start to change the goals and the objectives?
Oh.
Well, I, in my opinion, we have changed some of our goals and objectives. We are, as far as I know, focusing more on caregiving now than we have in the past with our committee.
For this year, you can keep the goals you've got. Yeah. It's not, that's if you want to.
Yeah.
You got a lot of, this is a transition period. You got a lot of flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm trying to do is make a decision without delaying it another week. I just love these meetings and we'll look at it later. Well, maybe, we could have 2,000 discussions before now and then. I'd rather get one done.
Okay, Phil.
Kick the can, Phil.
Yeah, Phil, I'm in your camp. I'll relent and cave in and go along with Phil Mandeville.
Aren't you kind, Mr. Orland?
All right. Well, I know that we've had support for well-being reimagined in the chat. Is there anyone else that verbally wants to talk about it or wants to show their hand that yes, I support, or anyone that has huge misgivings?
I support.
Okay.
Support.
Support.
Wonderful. It looks like the consensus is that yes, the majority of us agree with this name change.
Wow, it's done. Thank you.
And again, Meredith, one other reminder, if one of the committee members wants to look at the other groups to see, well, let's see what they got going. And now would be the time to make that move. So just, you have that option.
If someone feels like they have more of an affinity towards the other committees, they're welcome to check them out.
But I think what you're going to find, and the whole purpose of this, was for all the committees to do more dialoguing, working together. We're trying to avoid the silo effect. So we want everybody to kind of work together, and there'll be overlap, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have a great place to live that's safe and affordable in order to have well-being too. So there's always going to be overlap.
To me, it's all about well-being, really. Bottom line, if you don't have that, you don't have anything else.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Quality of life.
Quality of life is huge.
Yep.
And are we gonna? Is that all? Are we also looking at environmental issues as well? Is that going to be included as well?
I wonder if that was that one of yours. I know one of the groups has that. I'm not sure if it was yours, but you can. I mean, how environment impacts your health and well-being. So you then look at that. Yes.
Okay. Hello. As long as it's incorporated.
Yep.
Coming from a health education.
I think that Blue Zone presentation kind of showed us the things that are incorporated in well-being.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That would be great, Meredith, if we get that program for this group. That was really, really good.
Wonderful. Well, I will work with Phil to schedule that, and maybe we can have her come in July or August as our second speaker.
And yeah, if you can't do it, I will.
I'm pretty sure I can make those arrangements. All I need is a go ahead.
Go ahead.
I've been interested in Blue Zone for about 15 years now, and I was to hear Jean. I am so pleased that I was able to share that concept and make everybody aware of it. The possibilities are endless.
Well, I thank you, Phil, because I had no clue. I had never heard of it.
Either.
I am now going to make a little list of those 9 points and share them with my family members. I think it's that important.
Well, wait to the forthcoming speakers. You'll be equally as impressed.
There's actually a whole book. It's called The Blue Zones.
Yeah.
That you can get, Gene, that you can.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not sure all my family members would read that, but they'll certainly look at these 9 points real quick. And then that might develop the interest to get to the book. You're exactly right.
Right.
Yeah, it's only $12.95, Gene. I'm teasing. I'm playing. I don't know what price it is.
You know, I think we should talk to the Orange County Community Foundation and get them to kind of start the ball on a Blue Zone.
Oh, that would be awesome. Great.
I think that would be great. I think that's the place to start to try and get something going. I can imagine a Zoom class in any one of our parks with 300 people. I mean, that would be so fabulous.
Now, see, that would be a good, strong point to make with our county supervisors. We would like to be a Blue Zone County. What are you doing about it?
Right. And I don't know how it's funded or privately funded or some.
And I would like to know how that's different than an age-friendly community, because that's the other thing that people talk about a lot at the state level is AARP-sponsored age-friendly communities.
Yeah, I'm sure there's overlap, I'm sure. Right. This just seemed to really succinctly put it. So that's why I liked it.
No, it's great.
One of the people that Lauren works with is Hope Witkowski, and she was one of the primary directors of RSVP, Retired Senior Volunteer Program.
Mm-hmm.
She's on Lauren's committee. She's a go-getter. She worked with me in the city of LA, and we could probably even get her to join the meeting. I'm sure Lauren would like that. And you could hear a really dynamic, supportive individual. So I'd be really honored to bring that forward for the next couple of meetings.
Wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful.
Amina, did you have your hand up to make a comment?
Oh, no. No, that was the voting for the well-being.
All right, good. All right. Well,
thank you.
Just checking in that I didn't miss you.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That was a really wonderful discussion. And I can tell that we're all excited about doing something that's very impactful. So that's great. This committee is just a joy. So thanks to each of you. Now it's time for us to have public matters. At this time, members of the public may address the council regarding any items within the subject jurisdiction, provided that no action is taken on an off-agenda item unless authorized by law. And comments will be limited to 3 minutes. So do we have any members of the public? I see that we have two attendees that would want to make a comment.
You want to make a comment? You can raise your hand and I can unmute you. Seeing none.
Actually, I'm just noticing that Sue Langley is a member of our committee and not an attendee. So we have Robert, okay, if you would like to say anything. All right. Well, thank you. I don't think that we have anything else for today. Our next meeting, remember, we're dark in June, but we will meet again on July the 21st at 1 p.m. via Zoom and hear about a special presentation about the cancer code. So that's going to be important. We'll keep working together. I'll send out more information from what we discussed today from our presenter, Nancy Cooper. And I know that she'll want us to fill out her survey so that she can make sure that her information is impactful. And I think that we're officially adjourned at 2:43 p.m.
Thank you, Meredith.
Thank you. It was so nice to spend time with everyone.